Well, hello and welcome to the first Exiled Eagles of the decade. My name's Rob Seltzer, and in an answer to everyone's question, I am safe and well on the Central Coast. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then I advise you listen to every other Exiled Eagles podcast where the question is, where is Rob Seltzer? Now, it's a great pleasure that I introduce our first panel of the decade again. It's very similar to every other panel. Firstly, Lord Dale Sir Optus Quarty. I think I got it right. Was that right? I'm nervous.
Dickhead.
Oh, rude. Rude. But we can't bleep you out. We can't bleep out anything you say. That's part of the contract now. Mark recently returned from your travels. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. 2.5 weeks over in Vietnam, which was pretty groovy. Couple weeks abroad there. Managed to squeeze in a Palace match with my nephew there. So that was a bit of fun, and just catching up on some scores when I get Wi-Fi and whatnot. And also just great to be back potting with you, good-looking gentlemen.
Oh, stop it. Down in Melbourne, Ned Rock returns, unfortunately. How are you, Ned?
Yeah, I'm all right. Unfortunately, I haven't been on holidays or been on TV, so not really worth talking to, even less so than usual, so move on.
Excellent, and look, very excited for the Exiled Eagles. We actually have a proper podcaster with us today. It's a, unfortunately, we've got him through Ned, so we won't hold that against you for now, but Dave Troy, welcome to the Exiled Eagles.
Thank you for the welcome, Rob and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be on, and it's a pleasure to dive into something completely unknown. You mentioned that I come from a professional podcast setting. That is completely untrue. We are barely a rung or two above you, perhaps, but very, very lo-fi as well. So, look, it's all good, man, and I'm loving it.
Awesome. Well, look, you sounded sceptical when you're talking there, and you have every right to sound sceptical, because we are a mishmash of people and a podcast. But before we jump into anything, Dave, as is with everyone that comes on the Exiled Eagles, you have to now introduce yourself as to why you're a Palace fan, how you became a Palace fan, and what Palace kind of means to you over on this side of the world.
Yeah, pleasure to do so. Look, I've probably have not been on board as much as some of you guys. I've been a fan since about 2005. Big fan of English football for many years before that, but never really clung onto a team. Had various sympathies, often related to, where Aussies were playing. But yeah, in around 2005, I moved into sort of the Streatham, Clapham area, Clapham South area, made friends with a lot of Palace people over there, and just became a regular at home games. And that was around the era of Andy Johnson up front. For me, conveniently, Tony Popovic was captain at the time. And being a Croatian Australian, so that's my background. And the colours also fell into place. Big Hajduk Split fan, so that melted in with my Croatian background. So it all just fell into place being in South London at that particular time. And so find myself back here now. And it's obviously not as good as it would have been being able to attend every week, but still try and catch up on TV.
Well, we're delighted that you chose the mighty Palace, Dave. So very happy to have you.
Cheers, boys.
All right, so let's get into it. Halfway through the season, we are, we're ninth, unbelievably ninth. Yep. How are we all feeling about it? I mean, we can't be unhappy about being ninth in the table as Crystal Palace Football Club in the Premier League. But, and I'll come to me later on and think, I've made it clear where I kind of stand with everything at the moment. But Dave, as a new guy, let's go to you first. How are you feeling with this season? Does it feel like we're ninth in the Premier League?
To me, it's when you look at that big picture of being ninth, it seems like, around about where you would like to be. Just, we're about 3 or 4 points away from European spots. And considering the fact that we didn't actually spend that much money in the pre-season, and there wasn't really much squad movement of note, and we kept Wilf, but obviously lost Wan-Bissaka. I would have had us pegged for a bit lower considering how much we spent and the changes in the squad.
Yeah, look, 100%. 100%.
I'm happy.
You can't be unhappy, but and you made some good points there. But don't worry, Dave, you're going to hear a Seltzer rant in a minute, and these things are quite infamous. Quite infamous.
I've missed not having you on the pod, Rob.
You made a pod of just people saying, "Where am I?" Literally.
And it was their highest rated pod of the year.
It's because people were pissed listening to it, so they listened to it again. Dale, go on, mate. Over to you.
But I had a conversation via WhatsApp with some mates of mine in the UK. One in particular is a Liverpool fan. And I explained to him, whilst I'm happy, we're in ninth place. We're doing well. You know, we're getting some decent results, playing some okay football. But if you listen to Palace fans, a lot of them will say they want Hudson out. And the reason being, because whilst it impacts our football is okay, it's also not the best spectacle. And I feel that some people just want to be entertained. I get it. I totally understand it. I am very much in I like us being functional camp. And I like the fact that we have the fourth best defence in the league. I'm disappointed by the fact we have the second or the worst, I think it's the second worst attack in the division. But I like what's happening. You know, let's put it on a purely selfish level. We live in Australia. If we get relegated, we don't get to watch Crystal Palace. And I know that's really simplistic, but that is what I always say to myself. And I am happy that we are there performing and able to continue watching our team season on season.
And a very good point. Very good. Not one that I can't and won't argue with, but I probably will in a minute. Mark.
You argue? Never. Happy or not happy, in typical Palace form, yes and no. Ninth, start of the season, as Dave said, with the movement or lack of that we had, you'd be having that all day long. But yeah, then you can spin around and have a look at, dig a bit deeper, and ninth on the table, although some will argue doesn't lie, I feel it's kind of papering over a few cracks. At the moment, Dale set a stat or two there, 17th in total passes, 18th crosses and offsides, which is handy when you've got a bloke worth 30 mil in the box gagging for the odd cross or two. 19th in goals and assists, and dead last in shots at goal. So those stats don't lie also. But given our injuries at the moment, the horrible Christmas run, take a ninth and happy with an asterisk next to it.
Good, man. And finally, Neddy boy.
Can you all just cheer up? We've got a game on the 11th against Arsenal. We're currently above Arsenal by a point. If we beat them on Saturday, we can move, basically, according to the table, we can technically move into fifth. Yep. We won't, but we could technically move into fifth. Staying above Arsenal on the 11th of January in any season. I don't think I can really... I mean, I know that says more about Arsenal than it does about us. But, I think, you know, you're sitting there in ninth, chance at a European spot too. We've obviously decided that the cup competitions we're not going to waste our time with, Luka in particular. I think it's tough to really be too upset with where we're at right now. As Dale said, we get relegated, we can't watch ourselves play, but I mean, we don't look like getting relegated at the moment. Which I think the best thing that's happened to me this year was, I think it was watching, might have been the Newcastle game, sitting there in the pub, and we lost and went, well, you know, that's annoying, and then realised that the Villa fans are watching game at the other end. They also lost, and it put them back into the relegation zone. And I sort of looked at them and went, we lost. And at the end of the day,
that's
annoying, but it didn't really matter all that much to us. And I'm not really used to us playing Premier League football, playing against teams around us, losing the game, and it not really being the end of the world or being all that important to our position. So I'm kind of enjoying this mid-table obscurity for once. long may it continue.
If you look, sorry, if you look how far we've come from when we got promoted, the only other season we were arguably safe was the Pardew year when we were fifth at Christmas and had the cup run.
Jeez, we tried to ruin that.
Oh, we did try very hard. But that's probably the only season we've had where we haven't really had to worry about anything. Even last year, we were looking over our shoulders a little bit. The reality is this year, 3 wins and they're about safe. That's just unbelievable.
And we've got an easy one against Arsenal on Saturday.
So followed by Man City.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we'll do them as well.
2 wins and Liverpool coming up as well. So there's our 3 wins. Done.
That's it. And I cannot argue, really.
Here he goes. Of the pod. Please sit back.
Here we go. Don't 2020.
Adjust your headphones. Here he comes.
Welcome 2020. Welcome in 2020.
Rob Seltzer. Have the floor.
I cannot argue any one of those points. All absolutely excellent, fantastic, well, and valued. And the pod, thank you very much. But I think what Ned said right at the start of his ramble was, I mean, there's the reason we're talking about this. Normally, we're ninth in the league with Palace. You cannot be disappointed by that. But I think it comes with a caveat. And as Mark put an asterisk next to it, that are we guaranteed to be doing better? No. But I think there's times where we could have done better, where we've given teams far too much respect, Norwich being one of them. We approached that first half as if they were Man City. We didn't want to go near them, didn't touch them. I mean, we are the only team, I believe, in that three-game period over Christmas that didn't make one change. I know there's necessity and whatever, but we didn't make any changes. The only substitution he made was Max Meyer come off for Kouyaté twice. Now, a lot of the squad rotation stuff is on Roy. He doesn't make in-game changes. He doesn't give players time to play. And there's a reason we're getting all these muscle injuries. Squad's old, overworked, and the human body can't do so much, right? Then you get a player, for example, Mamadou Sakho, who's played 2 games this season. One of them at Spurs, he was unfit, and you expect him to play twice in 3 days. It's not going to happen. Can't do it. He's got an injury. The guy's got an injury past anyway. So that's where I think Hodgson falls down massively, and why Palace fans will never be like, he's a legend, is because the way he sets out. I didn't watch Derby. I don't know if any of you boys watched the Derby games. I haven't even bothered watching the highlights from what I've read. Is that we sat back and treated Derby as if they're Man City. And you're playing Arsenal on Saturday. We know they're going forward, they're great. Going at the back, they're awful. So we need to play to their weakness, which is us going on the attack. We won't do that. You know we won't. We're played for the draw and hopes to sneak a win. And we're ninth, fantastic, incredible. But there's also that nagging feeling in the back of my mind where there's a lot of other teams that haven't been that great this season. Spurs have been rubbish. We haven't taken advantage of that. Arsenal, we're above. Man United, but like a lot of the bigger teams, the traditional top six, aren't top six at the moment. We could have filled that void, and I just feel that we've let a couple of chances slip.
Mate, we weren't going to fill the top six void.
Can you just look at the teams that you've just compared us to?
Yeah, no, I'm saying, I'm not comparing us to them.
That's not our bracket.
Yeah, but then I'm not comparing us to them. It's like, well, look when Leicester. Let's go back to when Leicester won the league. They won the league because those teams had a bad season, right? So they're having a bad season this season, and we had a start where we could take advantage of it. And I just don't think we have fully. I'm not saying they win their break. Of course we're not. Christ, no. Next season, it will sort itself out. It'll probably sort itself out by the end of this season. But potentially, we could have made a bit more of a gun. That's all I'm saying.
At the table, though, of the teams that are in that bracket of ours, you've got Sheffield United are 1 point ahead of us, Wolves are 2 points ahead of us, and that's it. Mm. Beyond that, you're going Tottenham, United, Chelsea, City, Leicester, Liverpool. We're above everyone else.
Yeah.
So it's really, there's two teams and they're both 2 points ahead of
that's us. That's a way to look at it. But then,
to say that other teams have jumped in, they haven't, have they?
But let's look at it this way then. We did so well early on. The run of games we just had, we had Watford, Brighton, West Ham, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Southampton, Norwich.
Southampton.
All right. So that's nine games and we got... Is it 10 points out? Enough there. So if we picked up, held on. Okay, Southampton, they're knackered. I get it. Dropped 2 points there. Norwich were crap defensively. I feel like we probably dropped 2 points there. You know, there's times where we'd gone for the juggler, Newcastle, we were all over him. He doesn't make the change. He doesn't bring. That's when my Meyer came on against Brighton, changed the game, and we got a point. We're all over Newcastle. We didn't need three defensive midfielders on the pitch. He doesn't make the change. We lose 1-0. It's like those type of things, right? So am I disappointed? Absolutely not. I'm delighted where we're in the league. But I just feel, potentially, that we could have been... We could have been fifth and clearing fifth by 4 or 5 points. Just say it. All right, so it wasn't too bad, lads. That wasn't too negative or awful. But that's just kind of how I feel. This is a podcast. We can talk about how we feel. All right?
It was clearly the fucking longest just saying.
Entertainment for anyone else.
Mate, of course it is. Have you seen how long my replies are in the WhatsApp group? And annoyingly, Ned, I forgot to introduce you as the only person that actually supports referees. You watch the game to support the ref. Knob.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not entirely right. Accurate, but sure. 100%
accurate. No argument. Oh, shut up. I think, let's move on. I think the segue now into, let's talk about the streaming. Let's talk about Sir Optus in the, as I look at him, the top left-hand corner there. Because obviously with Amazon coming in, everyone in the UK hates it, right? They all hate it because it's bugging up the kickoff times. You know, every game's on live. For us, it's brilliant because, you know, we can, it's no problem with us. So I'm going to throw it over to Dale first because obviously you are now sponsored by Optus. I can see Optus written in the background there. Your Optus tattoo that's right across your forehead, which is a nice touch, by the way. Your Optus hat you got on, and you keep mouthing Optus at me. I understand. But, I mean, like, with all this streaming, what do you think it's doing for football? It's good for us on our end, but, like, in general, what's your thoughts?
Well, I think the main issue of it coming out of the UK is... If you want to watch the Premier League, if you are a football fan, you now need to have, for this season, Sky, BT and Amazon. You can get away with it with Amazon. You could get it for a two-week free trial and get all the games. But, you know, you're paying through the nose for the right to watch football. Okay? And I get it. It's not great. But as an Australian resident, or citizen, as I am now, we sit here and we went from Foxtel, who at the time, everyone was like, oh, Foxtel's brilliant. I can press the red button. I can watch any game. To Optus, who deliver a product. Let's be honest. Their content is good. They have loads of content.
Shameless, Dale.
Oh,
shameless.
Shut up. They have good content. They have really good content. They pitch into the UK or the overseas broadcast. They get that sort of stuff. They've got Schwarzer and whoever else over in the UK. They develop good content. They've been out. They filmed us doing the Brighton game. They used it as content. Yep. They care about what's happening here in Australia for football and what the Australian public gets. We now have the joy of being able to watch any game wherever we want, not just on a dodgy red button, so you had to beat your TV, but you can watch it on your phone, on your laptop, work, any way you want, right? At any time. And if you get the right mobile deal, you watch it data free. The future of sport viewing, the future of entertainment, full stop, is streaming. Whether it be Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Stan, whatever streaming service it is the future. Everyone's putting money into it. Sport will go that way. The NBA have been doing it for 2 years of NBA League Pass. They've got NFL League Pass, NHL League Pass. You can watch any team you want, anytime. The only issue is, if you are a sport nut and you like loads of different sports, you're going to end up having more subscriptions that you know what to do with and where's the time to watch everything. But, let's be honest, we love it. It's great. And it's the future.
You know, with... Kayo Sports and having an Optus Sports and a Kayo Sports subscription in Australia, it doesn't actually cost that much, you know, compared to what we used to pay for Foxtel. It is inevitable, this whole march towards streaming. I agree with Dale, and actually was not convinced to begin with, but now that I've got a good internet connection and I'm able to get Optus and I'm able to get Kayo pretty seamlessly, it's a winner.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Optus and I use my old boss's KO account, so I can't complain. So I get one for free. How good is that? I do give him my Stan in return, so it's a win-win. But yeah, it's Ricky Gervais made a point of it on the Golden Globes about the streaming site. So I can only but agree. Any other thoughts from Little Mark, or you fairly in agree with what's been said?
So one of the things I had a I can't claim credit for the idea. I can't give credit to whoever gave it to me because I've forgotten who it was. But basically, it was a very valid point. I don't see why. So the current Premier League TV rights deals, various TV rights deals, are worth what, $1 billion, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's Dale's Opta's contract, actually.
I get the two confused very easily. Mm. But what I don't understand is, so let's say there's so many people worldwide that want to watch the English Premier League. If they got together with the Football League as well and released an English football style Netflix thing worldwide, charged £10 or $10 a month for that service, they would have so many subscribers that they would end up with, it would be cheaper for everyone, they would end up with $10 billion instead of $1 billion because all of the money would go straight into their pocket and they just, to be able to run it. I mean, in terms, obviously, as you've all said, streaming is the way of the future, it's so much more convenient, that's how it is. I just think that the easiest way for the Premier League, rather than negotiating these rights deals with all these other providers, they've got the market. Just start, go yourself.
So, Ned, just on that, so the Premier League have been trying to appoint a new chief exec, I think it is, and the first person they offered it to was a lady whose name I cannot remember, but she was from Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
And the reason they offered it to her and why at the time she'd accepted was because she had turned Discovery Channel from just being a cable station into a streaming service and basically modernised what they did. And that's why the Premier League went. It was no secret the Premier League want to go down that route of creating that package that they can basically say, we own it, we are the rights holder, we own the content, we do everything, and then we'll just ship it out. Don't need intermediaries, which, again, is what's going to happen. Obviously, she didn't take the job, and now two other people haven't taken the job, and it smells like something's wrong at the Premier League. Shock horror. But it is something they've obviously thought about.
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to go, I would suggest. And, I mean, that just becomes easy. If they partner with the Football League, you can get, it'd be great, because then, you know, in the highly likely, you know, scenario where we eventually get relegated, it'd mean that it wouldn't actually make any difference to our prospects of being able to watch us over here, which would be fantastic. I mean, not that I want us to go down at any point, but if we do, I don't want us to go down and have the double pain of, I can only watch 3 games a year now. So, yeah, I think that's the way to go forward. Cheapest, easiest. And it would, you know, the Premier League is the big enough group that they've got everything that they could want to do that.
Yeah. Mark, anything else to add?
Probably just one or two bits that might be of interest, not being touched on. Obviously, Dale, pretty familiar with all of this gear. I always thought the guy had a good head for radio, but he made it onto the box. Well done, champ. And yeah, it obviously is the way of the future. If anything, it just surprises me that the Premier League or the AFL haven't got that sorted already and have their own thing out. And like Ned said, they just get truckloads of subscriptions. Then here now, lucky enough, Optus have the fourth. I think, all right, we're probably not going to get everyone in our back pocket to Optus Sports to watch the football or whatever, because you might have people like myself that are still Fox and Telstra and got things tied up elsewhere. So they offer the package of just the football outright, which I think you can get on the app. It's like $15 a month. Mm. Which is not bad. Thankfully, I'm piggybacking off a friend of the show up here, Simo. Cheers, mate. So, but if I didn't, I'd just be happy to pay that. I'd still watch it. And then, you know, if in the inevitable case of us getting relegated and going to the Championship, I wonder too if it had come to a position, maybe not in top flight, but lower than that, where clubs themselves, a la Palace TV, you know, they might come out and do their own thing, and you just subscribe to the club and you just see the club's games, which I know they already stream a few on Palace TV, pre-season friendlies and bits and bobs. So it might even go back, you know, back into a tier lower than than just a league and back into club land. Who knows? But I'm sure we'll find out plenty of it in the future because, yeah, inevitable.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I really like your idea, Ned, of that, the Netflix of football. But from what I hear and understand, the Premier League and the EFL are not best of friends. So
no.
Trying to work out like the split, who's going to get what split, I don't ever see that happening because the Premier League is too greedy. But I really like that idea. I think it's really good. Yeah, so any people at the Premier League looking for a chief exec, then us exiled Eagles are happy to step fill that void. We will split the job five ways, each on the same salary of at least 250 grand a year. Problem.
Only 250 grand a year. You're selling yourself short there, Rob.
I'm assuming. Well, it's five. That's 1.25 million between five of us. That's just the salary.
Isn't Dale already on more than that at Optus?
Yeah, Dale,
yeah, Dale just work on a consultant basis. He'll be on a day rate.
I really hope no one from Optus hears this. It's like, there's no way I'll be back on their shows.
But I mean, I have heard one more rumor about you, Dale. While you're there, if you could confirm or deny, is it true that you have agreed to call your child Optus Fan Bands Quarty?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Only if it's a boy.
Ned, unfortunately for you, your one funny of 2020 has happened in the first show, so you've completely...
I've wasted it.
You've gone big early. You've gone big early there. The only reason Dale won't get on Optus again is when everyone else finds out how much he's getting paid. They're going to throw the toys at the pram and that's it.
Oh my God.
All over. Right, let's move on. Come on. Come on, everyone. Right. I'm trying to think about best ways to do it. Let's talk about everyone's favourite. Let's talk about VAR now. Because it's been... It's been involved in...
No one talks about that. It's a niche topic.
It is a niche topic and it hasn't been mentioned at all by any other podcast or any WhatsApp groups. And Marky Mark seems chomping at the bit to talk about VAR. So I'm probably going to throw it to you first. Look, it's been for us. It's been against us. What are your thoughts on VAR?
Look, I think certainly not going to bring anything new to the table that probably hasn't been said, but in my opinion, the theory of it is good. The technology is probably very good with some room for improvement. Its application is poor at best, and its reassurance that it's brought to the greater football viewing public, I don't think even exists. It's created more questions than answers. No one knows what the fuck constitutes a handball anymore. Offside, you'd think it's pretty black and white, and I think it generally has, but then we've got talks of armpits and if they go to the next frame and all this sort of jazz, so nothing conclusive. So I know as a Palace fan, coming in from last season, the amount of penalties we were getting, I thought, sweet, we're going to get that and more. Doesn't appear to be panning out that way. Up till now, we'd probably had the rub of the green with VAR, I think you'd have to admit. Last couple have not and have been stinkers. And it just doesn't appear to be consistent. And anything that's introduced in any sport, I think you'll just all agree, you just want consistency. And that very much appears to be lacking, appears to very much be favouring the bigger teams. What I saw while I was away, just a stat came up. If there were no VAR decisions for goals or something, I think, and Liverpool like 17th or something like that. So
seventh,
giving them a
seventh.
Massive...
I think that might have been slightly photoshopped. I'm unconvinced by the authenticity of that picture.
Mate, I was pretty drunk on very cheap cocktails, so it was an easy sell for me at the time. But I think you agree, yeah, like City and Liverpool certainly have been getting everyone left scratching their head going, well, how is that play not sent off? How is that still a goal, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then more so to that fact, they're using it in the League Cup games just at grounds that are in the Premier League. So
that is
how on earth
ridiculous.
Can you have an equal competition where you've got teams that are all in the same pot, can be drawn out the hat, And just by virtue of that sequence of hat draw, whether you get VAR in your game or not, if it's not applicable at one ground in the whole comp, it's not applicable on any. It's just not even playing field. And yeah, like Dale just chimed in, it's ridiculous. So just get it consistent, VAR. Whatever you are, apply yourself a bit better and a bit more consistently, or don't let the door hit your ass on the way out.
Go on then, Dale.
Oh, look, we've had many a chat in the WhatsApp group about what constitutes VAR, whatever else. For me, I've said it, has the ball crossed the line, yes or no? Easy to implement, tick. Is there a case of mistaken identity? Easy, yes or no, tick. Offsides, they are binary. You are offside or you're onside. The technology says someone is offside, then they're offside. The problem is, it is now got down to a minute level with the technology of old mate's armpit is offside, therefore they are offside, which is what we don't like. But when we benefit from it, we don't care. I have said that the way I think VAR should be used is they should use the pitch side monitor. To the best of my knowledge, it's not been used once in the Premier League. It was used in the FA Cup at Palace against Derby and it got Lucas sent off. Fine, no issue with it. The referee had a look. In the US, in MLS, if there's a decision, they go to VAR. The referee will look at it twice, three times maximum. They can't see an obvious error. It's play on, the decision stands. I am more than happy with that. I do not want it to still be so subjective where, oh, someone's dived. Sometimes you can't tell if someone has dived because if you get feel contact, you will go down. That is what happens. To then still have a referee then go back and say, oh, let me decide because someone said in my ear it's now a penalty. It's a penalty. It doesn't mean it's a penalty. Someone can fall over it. It's fine. You know, let's just get on with the game. Yeah, there are certain things you can use VAR for. There's certain things you can't. The first thing they need to do is get the referees using the monitor and having to make a decision after one or two looks and not wasting time of 4 or 5 minutes because it's ruining the experience for people at home and at the ground.
What about you, Dave? Obviously, you've watched a lot of A-League. Ned spoke on this one before as well, and I'm leaving you to last on purpose, Ned. Because then I'm coming in afterwards. So, yeah, what do you think? And how?
Of course.
Yeah, how it's being rolled out in the Premier League and obviously how it's comparing it to the A-League now. So what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, look, when it was implemented in the A-League, I think everybody saw it as the test case. We were the guinea pigs and there was an expectant result out of that all of the bugs would be ironed out and things like that. But often the argument when all the VAR failures were happening in the A-League was that, well, it's only this bad because our referees aren't very good. And in the English Premier League, the referees will be of a higher standard and these things won't happen. But what we're seeing is that VAR simply just adds this extra layer of subjectivity. So a decision happens, goes up to the guy who's reviewing it, and ultimately they're making a judgment call as well on a lot of areas that are grey areas. You know, Dale talked about the offside stuff and totally agree. It's like when you start to look at it so microscopically, you're always going to find something, and things look different in slow motion
correct,
as well.
Correct.
So you could review something over and over again and it will look different each time if you choose to do it that way. So I'd call myself an anti-VAR fundamentalist in terms of the A-League. I just don't see how it's adding. What it also kills is just the match day experience for fans, and that's been such a drag, because you go to these games and that euphoria that you might feel after a goal or a penalty save or something like that, and for it to just be reversed in such a, I guess, dispassionate way, it just kills something small inside the game, something, you know, that's special about being live at a game. That's how I sort of see it.
Yep, and Ned, finally, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, when you say something small there, Dave, I don't think it is something small. I think it's pretty much, that's about as big as it gets. It's the entire essence of live sport. I think, so, I mean, with VAR, all I want, as Marcus said, is consistency. you want consistency, but as Dale's touched on as well, you also need it to not ruin that live experience. So, I mean, I think as the offsides, you know, if it's offside, it's offside. But and the whole thing, you get these arguments of, you know, well, what happened to benefit of doubt of doubt to the attacker? Well, VAR and that technology took away any element of doubt. So if they say it's offside, technically it is. Do we care enough? Probably not. So I think there needs to be a way where I think the issue is with that live, the whole live experience is the fact that when the ball goes into the back of the net, you look at the linesman's flag. If the linesman's flag's down, you celebrate. That's how I've always done live sport, live football. A lot of people don't even go to the linesman's flag step of things. But, I mean, if the linesman's flag's up, at least at the start, then you know straight away where you stand. It's this sort of, you know, the goal's scored, everyone runs back to the centre circle, they set up, and the referee just stands there with his finger to his ear for 3 minutes, and then before anything actually happens. And you sit there and you go, is it offside, is it not? And then, you know, and then you end up sort of having this half-assed cheer again afterwards as to, you know, whether or not your team's got the decision go their way. And you sort of go, that's kind of ruined it. You get same thing sort of with your red card decisions or whatever it is. If it takes 15 replays to work something out, then it's not a clear and obvious error. I mean, it's quite simple. As Dale said, you know, I don't know how they do it in the MLS. I'm also fairly wary about reports like that because I keep reading these reports from the UK that go on about how wonderful the VAR is in Australia and how they're grants, you know, trend-setting by, you know, promoting the referees being able to talk, you know, and they see it on the TV and all this rubbish, and you go, no, that's not how it is. It's shit here too. So I'm, you know, if that is how it works in MLS, fantastic. I think the referees do have to look at the pitch side monitor because at the end of the day, as a player, you need to know what the you get to know the referee that you're working with, and you get to know what their standards are. So, you know, if a referee allows you to get away with a little bit of shirt pulling here or there, then as long as that goes both ways, that's fine. Whereas if the referee allows you to get away with a little bit of shirt pulling, but the VAR doesn't, you're stuck there as a player going, well, I've had my shirt pulled. Is that a foul? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. You don't get the call. You then go and do the same thing back to your opponent. The VAR, the referee sees it, goes, that's fine. The VAR goes, well, actually, I've got a different threshold to the ref. Therefore, I'm giving that. So as a player, you're sitting there going, where do I stand? What can I do? So in terms of getting that consistency, any decision should be made by the on-field referee. VAR should be there so that if he hasn't seen something, the guy in his ear can go, this is what I've seen. Is that what you saw? The ref goes, yeah, it was. They go, fair enough, no problems. If the ref goes, actually, that's not what I saw, he goes, okay, do you want to have a quick look? He walks over, has a quick look at the replay, makes his decision based on what he's seen. 2-3 replays, done. I mean, it shouldn't take more than that. Disallowing goals, it's got to be obvious and it's got to be quick. I mean, as you say, that ruins the live experience. As soon as you have your goal scored, everyone goes back and then everyone has to reset again because it's offside by a shoulder, not an armpit. You score with the top bit, not the under part. But yeah, that's my summary.
Lots of good points in there. And I'm just going to pick out a couple and then kind of move on because I'm sure this has been done to death everywhere. But I think VAR's here to stay, and I like the premise of the of VAR. Like, for example, the Connor Wickham goal against Fulham. That's what VAR's there for. He looked a mile offside. I mean, when he scored it, I was like, he's offside. And then he actually goes back to it. He'd actually timed it perfectly. That's what VAR's there for. I mean, don't even worry about Wilf against Southampton. The pukey one against Spurs is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. His feet are behind the defender. I don't understand how you can say that's offside, right? So a couple of things I think here. One, if we look at rugby. Now, I play rugby and I'm quite involved in rugby. The way, if a try is scored, and it could be a bit of a contentious one, the referee thinks it's scored, but he's just not sure, his wording is there any reason I can't award this try? So they're looking for something deliberate that's done in there, that there's been a bit of foul play, a knock-on, or something that's blatantly obvious that they haven't seen because a melee of bodies, and he can disallow the try. If there's nothing there, try time. So, for example, let's go to the Wilf one. Meyer scores, quick VAR check, is there any... I think blatantly obvious, is there a reason that I can't award that goal? They check it, his armpit's offside. No, it's a time frame because it's been actually proven that they can't tell when the ball's actually touched. You can't disallow that. It's not clear and obvious. Second thing I really don't like about it, and I'd like to see changed, is they need specific VAR officials, not John Moss in the booth for one when Anthony Taylor's refereeing. Because if, say, John Moss then overrules Anthony Taylor, and then the next week John Moss is refereeing and Anthony Taylor's in the booth, well, then Anthony Taylor might be thinking, well, fuck him. He made me look like a dickhead last week. VAR comes in this week. I'm going to make him look like a dickhead. And I'm not saying they do that, but you're a human being, you might feel like that. So, and if you don't like someone, why not? I'd do it to Ned every single week if I could.
I'd only ref Palace and make decisions in our favour.
Okay, you can carry on. But, so, I just think there's too much recipe there for that type of thing to go on. The human beings, as for example, that can happen. So, and finally, is my last thing I say, is it's not so... VAR is doing what VAR has been told to do, right? They need to change the rules. The rules have to change. The offside rule has to change. It can't be if a part of the body, if like the someone's hand is in front of the defender, they're offside. It has to be full body is in front.
It's part of the body. It's a part of the body that can play the ball.
Yeah, but like, well then, what about the Wolves goal then? The one that was, his finger was in front of him. That was a finger.
His finger, Rob.
Well, I'll tell you what, let me just very quickly, before you two get into an argument, I'll just say this, right? We don't like it because I'm assuming everyone on this podcast is in their 30s and 40s. So we don't like it, right?
I'm 21.
There are going to be very soon a generation of people who have only known VAR in football and its current guys. And you know what? To them, it will be the norm. There are people who watch rugby who will turn around to you and say, TMO is the worst thing going. It sucks the life out of the game. They go to it all the time and it's terrible. And they're the people who 20 years ago, literally, were what rugby was all about. It's a cycle. It's cyclical. We do not like it. We will never like it. They may tweak a rule here. They may tweak a rule there. However, as far as they are concerned, they are getting the decision right in the majority of cases, especially where offside is concerned. And if they're getting it right, then the Premier League, IFAB, DFA, whoever, will turn around and say, what's wrong with it? You guys wanted the right decision. You're getting the right decision.
I hear what you're saying.
Just to clarify, I am all for human error in sport. I'm all for it. It's what makes sport. As gutting as it was, human error is what led to, with Martin Kelly giving away the goal the other week, right? It's human error. It's what happens. What, because we don't like it, we can turn around and say, oh, hold on, we're going to go back to that exact moment and tell Martin Kelly he can't play that pass and everyone carry on. Human error is what sport is about. It's what makes it good. We live in a country where rugby league is huge. And what they want to do, they want to increase the amount of fatigue in rugby league players by having less substitutions because it will produce more errors and make the game more flowing, right? We want human error in sport.
I totally hear you saying, and to be honest with you, I don't dislike it. I just dislike the way it's used at the moment. I can see what they're trying to do. I can see that. I can see the long-term pictures. I don't dislike it. I just think they have to change the way they do it. So for that, because you can't have
a lot like you dislike
the offside. No, I don't. I like it. I think it's good. I mean, look at, for example, if Southampton scored the goal that Maya scored, there's no way I complain about that. No chance. I don't care that it's against Bellis. And we had this conversation. There's no way I go up in arms.
You've got to have a level of consistency, though. So it's not. I mean, if you say that, you know, we're not having it because it's a millimetre there and you increase the threshold. Say you increase the threshold to 30 centimetres.
That's what it's got. So
if it's 30 centimetres plus
one
millimetre,
it's got to change.
Then suddenly you're going to have
to... It has to be something blatant. It has to be something like, you know, the whole body is in front of the last defender, wherever it be. Is the offside rule as it was.
Body plus a millimetre.
Clear, or it's a bit of date. There's offside. It's the whole body.
You're back in exactly the same spot, whether it's a millimetre. It's a millimetre either offside or a millimetre not.
You see, all this, boys, is actually proving the point that the VAR is completely subjective. It's a Pandora's box. You're both arguing about interpretations, and that's essentially what the VAR is bringing to the game, additional interpretations. And you bring it back to that one guy in the middle of the park, and you kind of accept the good with the bad when it comes to you some weeks, and some weeks it doesn't.
Yeah.
I think most fans would prefer that than the what I would call side effects of the VAR. So, you know, that euphoria that we were talking about before.
Yeah, that fair point. But for this podcast, it's I'm right, Dad's wrong. And
that's okay. I'll just edit that bit out, Rob.
I'm getting the hang of this.
Every week,
I'll edit it. I'm wrong, you're right. That's
with it.
Finish up.
He's got both sound grabs for it.
So, Mark, go on.
And this is my final bit. I'm kind of sick of hearing about it, but you just need to keep addressing it every week because there's different things pop up. It was a similar thing in cricket. You know, Dale mentioned there'll be people that remember a time before TMO, VAR, things like that. Like, you know, I remember a time watching cricket before Snicko, and it was literally just the umpires and their fingers in the air or not. And then Snicko came along, and it was wonderful. It was revolutionary. Actually, Richie Beno said out of all the technologies or things introduced to cricket, that was his favourite revolution in cricket. And I think they get it very right in a couple of things they have going for them there. A, the game allows it. It's very stop-start. You've got a guy fast bowling or something, you know, could be easy 90 seconds, 2 minutes just between deliveries. So you've already got those windows of, you know, if you're watching Test cricket, another 30 seconds, minute is hardly going to hamper your 5 days of watching cricket. Also, they've cleverly allowed a grey area, which is umpire's call. So for LBWs, things like that, where they're taking a projected trajectory of the ball, if it's less than half the ball hitting the wicket, goes back to the umpire's call. What did the umpire think? Umpire thinks he was out on your bike. Thus, leaving the clear and obvious. Well, it's not clear and obvious. So if it's not clear and obvious, you go back to what the umpire said. And that's probably one main trick that I think VAR is missing at the moment. It doesn't have that component. Unfortunately, the game being what it is, high tempo, et cetera, it's kind of sucking the life out of it with the delays.
Good point. Back to umpire scores is a good point. Boys, we can talk about this all night, I reckon. Let's move on quickly. So I'll run out a bit of time. So it's going to be a quick round robin. Mark, that's a quick answer here, not the usual one.
Keep it quick.
Yeah. So we just played a million games in a row. Do you think there needs to be a winter break in the Premier League? I personally, yes. Go, Dale. Winter break, yes or no?
No, cut out the one round of the League Cup being double, the semi-final being two legs, and get rid of one game in the winter, in the Christmas period, and have an extra midweek game later on in the season.
Okay, Dave?
I'm a big no, purely for selfish reasons. The Christmas and New Year period here in Australia is a time I usually get off work and I can actually stay up a bit more and watch more games. So I love the high frequency of games at this time of year.
Okay, Ned?
No, but they probably should chuck in a break at some point, which I think they've talked about. So I think, the Christmas thing is a big part of English football. Keep that. Maybe, as Dale said, take a game off. But, you know, maybe give them a break at some other point in the season.
And Mark?
I'll say yes, and with a mixture of both Dale and Ned's answer. The Chrissy break's important. Yeah, put us in around later in the cup. Do another ponk in another midweeker somewhere down the road. And probably wouldn't kill to have a break at some point. But yeah, probably not over Chrissy because I do like the flurry of games and generally being off work and being able to enjoy most.
Yeah, but I just think it's madness. Absolute madness, but hey-ho. All right, it's January. That means Paddy's being linked with every player on planet Earth. Yep. We need pretty much all of the ones we've been linked to as well. That's 95 players into the squad. Dale sent through a link that Newcastle are looking at Lookman from Red Bull Leipzig. If that's happening, then if we're not all over that, then Jesus Christ. Dave, do you think we're going to be getting anyone in? January.
I think with the problem I have is that the rumours around Zaha leaving and the fact that Chelsea aren't apparently willing to meet the £80 million, I think it is, the amount that we've asked for. There's two issues here. The longer we haggle on that, the less time we have to sort a replacement, I'm going to presume. So to me, it's imperative that we move quickly. And look, I think I want to be a little bit, don't know you guys, but maybe a little bit controversial. I'm going to say talismanic ability aside for just one moment. Like, we know Wilf can change games, but I reckon if we're savvy with the Zaha replacement, assuming he goes, I look at his output this season. It's been
Dale is listening to this.
What I'd call
delight.
Right up there. Okay.
Dale hates
Preach.
Wilf.
Dale's found a friend.
Three goals, two assists, and look, I think there's been a noticeable lift, funnily enough, when the window comes closer. So look. To me, we have to act quickly and get that funds supply going and start to achieve. And if we're savvy, as I said, I'll come back to that. If we're savvy with who we replace Zaha with, there's potential for growth, I think.
Go on in, Dale. I wasn't going to come to you next. I was going to. But
I agree with Dave. I mean, look, there's absolutely no denying what Wilf can do. Whether he's setting up a goal, whether he's going on a run and he's relieving pressure, I get it. The guy is. To us at the Palace, he's Lionel Messi. Simple as.
Yeah.
But there is a time when we are not going to have Wilf. And that time is getting closer. And for me, in the summer, we should have signed Alan Saint-Maximin, for example. Right? We should have signed him, regardless of whether Wilf was going or not. Do you know why? Because football is a squad game, as we are now finding out. We sign him at the start of the window. Wilf stays. Brilliant. We've got extra cover. We sign him and Wilf goes, there's someone who's been around the squad for 4 weeks and he's integrated and we're ready to go. Same with Lookman now. I'm not saying we're going to sign Lookman, but as an example, we sign Lookman, we have that player in the squad. We need that player now. We might need him in 6 months' time, but he's there. Not being reactionary. Because let's be honest, the whole Wilf thing in the summer was a joke, right? I also think it's not just about Wilf, it's about we actually need a bit of a revamp of our squad. We have one of the oldest squads in the Premier League. We need to look at the likes of, and I know people, I have my opinions on this guy and people don't agree with me, but for example, Mamadou Sakho, the guy chews up a lot of money for someone who doesn't play a lot of games. We need to find a buyer for him. We need to find a buyer for Christian Benteke. And we need to start looking at where those replacements are from now. Because as we've said at the start of this pod, we are ninth in the league. We have no fears of relegation, touch wood. This is the time when you can get these players in and say, right, let's get them integrated into the squad and let's be ready for next season. If we wait and start doing it on August 31st this year, we're up shit creek.
Yep.
Yeah, agree with all that. And unfortunately, getting a good start to any transfer window just doesn't appear to be in Palace's DNA, or not in the last handful anyway, not in top flight. We had that one awesome window with Big Sam, and it's just been a bit of piss and wind ever since, really. Last window, I've been good value for money and raised all our eyebrows, but yeah, you know, the AWB money, what's that doing? So yeah, I mean, I don't know, the answer's easy. Open up the checkbook, boys, and get cracking, but you know, the same thing every window. I'd like to see definitely us making some movements for life post Wilf, because I think at best he's gonna go up season's end, at absolute best. So why not get cracking on that now, and get someone of a good or decent calibre. I'm not saying we splash it all on one bloke. You know, get him in where he can bed in for half a season without relegation woes. You know, gel with the lads and that sort of thing. And then, you know, we go again next season with a bit longer plan for a squad that's you know, going to be there. You know, all this time, the last three or four winners, it's just been Wilf chat. Is he going? Is he staying? What's the deal? Where we get the money, et cetera, et cetera. So let's start getting that nutted out now. And then in conjunction with that, you know, Roy as well. I can't see him going past this season. I think he signed for this season and next. So maybe something for Stephen Coe to think about as well.
Before you go
no Babacar chat. No Babacar chat this window, by the way, which is odd.
Before you go to Ned, I just want to say that a point that James Howland made in the WhatsApp group, we have done very well with our transfers. Let's be honest, $2.5 million for IU. You know, at the time it raised a few eyebrows. It's only $2.5 million, and it's come good, right? Without his goals, we're in the relegation zone. Vicente Guaita, no matter what anyone said, I'll put my hand up. I thought something smelled fishy there when we had to wait to get him, but we got him on a free transfer. Brilliant. James MacArthur, he's done a job and he didn't break the bank. I don't want us to be going out there buying 27, 30 million pound players because I'm not sure that's what we need. We need functional players, and someone like a Lookman on loan, try before you buy, is a sensible option. I just don't know why we don't do that. And also, Victor Camarasa, what's going on there?
Christ, don't even mention that. This will be the one podcast that doesn't talk about him and Max Meyer for 20 minutes.
Sorry. Well, you've stolen all my points and you said I can't talk about it now. No, I think as Dale has probably touched on, I think everyone sort of, you know, Mark said, you know, we got the Wan-Bissaka money, what's happened to that? And I think you have to look at it and go, well, what's happened to that is it's all gone to our very expensive overpaid footballers that don't play a whole lot of football. And I wouldn't imagine that there's huge chunks of it left. If we do sell Wilf, I would not want us to try and sign a replacement. I think every time in the club's history that we've sold one of our superstars and tried to go like for like, it's failed dismally. We're not going to get another Wilf. What we can get is a perfectly serviceable winger and two fullbacks for 80 million quid. I think if you look at our squad, you go... You've got Benteke sitting there not really playing 120,000 a week. You've got Sakho sitting there not really playing probably 100,000 a week or so. You've got Wickham sitting there not really playing 60,000 a week. You look at the other clubs around us in our bracket in the league that we talked about before. They don't have those players. If those players are on those wages at their club, they're starting every single week. They're their key players. We just sort of seem to get really lazy a lot of the time around transfer window time. Occasionally we'll have some of those signings like Dale talked about, which are fantastic. They're the ones we should be looking for. But then we sort of sit there and go, Benteke, when we signed him, fantastic. 30 million, came in, had a great impact in that first season, has dropped off. Sakho had his seat bid on loan, then cost us an absolute fortune to get him in on a permanent basis. Good player, sure. Is he the only person that we could have got in at that time that could have done that job? Probably not. Could we have got someone for less than 30 million, not paying £100,000 a week? I feel like we probably could have. I think someone like a Gary Cahill, perfect signing. They're the sorts of things I'd like to see us look for. If it costs us 10, 15 million to get that person in that's going to help us in the right spot, go for it. If it's going to cost us 30, not really that interested. We need to get ourselves a couple of fullbacks because we've got one in the squad. Everyone sits there and goes, if we're getting a striker, we need to offload at least two of the ones we've got on big money first. I don't think there's any point having three strikers, playing with one front, having three strikers on £70,000 plus a week and playing the one that's on 30 grand a week instead. There's no point adding another one to the wage bill. If one comes in, one's got to go. If we keep Wilf, for me, that's a good window. Bring in a couple of, you know, good squad players that can bed themselves, get used to, you know, the way that we play and just get involved. Aren't super expensive, but can add something, like, say, a Luca did when he came in. That would be perfect.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So everything, I agree with everything there. I'll just add a couple of bits. My own... just a couple of names I'll throw out there. I think if Lookman is available on loan, then we should be moving heaven and earth to get him, to give it a go. And I'm going to say, I'll come out straight out and say, I haven't seen much of these players play, but the amount of hype they're getting from well-respected journalists or like on social media and stuff,
I would like Jared Bowen at Hull. Scored, I think he's got about 20 odd goals this season already. He's got about maybe even double figures for assists as well. Available on a free at the end of the season. I'd love us to see us steam in. I know loads of clubs are waiting for him to go on a free. Steam in January, and he's 10 million. We pay you 10 million now, or you get nothing in the summer. Take or leave it to Hull. You know, put them under pressure. He's with a contract. He's a £30 million player. He's a championship. We go in. He's 10 million, or he goes on a free. Why don't we do something like that? I think it's well documented that we're in for Ollie Watkins from Brentford, who had a £10 million release clause. We messed it up, and now he's signed a new contract. And he's worth £25 million. Is it Eze at QPR? Lots of hype around him, and they're talking around about the £10-12 million mark. So again, not going to break a bank for a Premier League club. And there's a right back, Nathan Ferguson at West Brom, also very, very highly rated by a lot of people. So these are the type of players we're looking at. They're all young. All of the ones I mentioned there are 21 or 22 and under. Changing the squad around, we certainly need a right back. We certainly need a left back. Roy has called the owners out on it, and I don't see why the owners won't do it. If you're the Americans trying to sell out, which obviously they are, what looks better, a club fighting relegation that people are going to come and buy, or a club that have a few young boys that looked pretty good last season, finished comfortably mid-table between 9th, 10th, 11th, something like that. It's a hell of a better prospect for someone to come and buy. So I think it's worth the while. It's kind of like when you're trying to sell a house. That's why I see it. You've got a shitty run-down house. The estate agent comes in. It's worth 500 grand. You put 50 grand into 50 grand of your own money in, you redo the kitchen, you redo the bathroom, do the floors, make it look beautiful. Estate agent comes in. It's worth 750 grand. You know? It's a hell of a lot easier sell. That's where I think we are currently as a football club trying to be sold. We are that shitty rundown house. We need a bit of investment. It's kind of speculate to accumulate. And I think it's a time to do so. And there's certainly players out there that could potentially be on the market from, if not in the nose, but if the respective journalists that I actually, in inverted commas, trust, like a Dom Firefield, Ed Mellion, those type of guys that are name checked that write a lot about Palace, and Matt Woosnam, for example, that know what they're talking about Palace. So they've all mentioned those type of guys are around. So potentially busy. How we haven't got anyone in already, I'll never know. We have 13 players, and I believe Steve Parish has been on the phone to Dale to see if he can still play for the weekend. It's that desperate. All right, guys, we're coming towards the end, so we're gonna head the hand over now to our. We've actually got three Aussies on the pod this time, so obviously A League's up and running. Sven Goran Eriksson in the running for the Newcastle Jet job, which will be an interesting one, to say the least. Dave, this is your specialist subject. This is your time. Please plug your pod as well, because I know you do. I think Ned was bigging up saying it's the biggest A League pod in Australia. Would that be right?
Oh, I think he's blown wind up my ass a bit there. It's probably, if you were going to talk about fan-made podcasts in terms of A-League clubs, it'd be up there, yeah. But
yes.
Yeah, it's been 5 years or so we've been going at it now, and it started in very humble surrounds, and you know, just completely amateurish, and still is amateurish, but we kind of pride ourselves on that. So,
like the pod you're on now, Dave.
So, so the what was the question?
Yeah. So as I said, over to you guys now. A League started. So how's it going? What teams are looking good? Any players that might be worth a look at, or with potential to we might see in the red and blue down in South London?
Good. I'm glad Ned got that question through to me. He mentioned something about plug any A-League players that look good, and so I did actually think of a couple. So none of them come from my club, Melbourne Victory, but they're two fullbacks that I thought could be appropriate for Palace, and one of them's actually a Kiwi at Wellington Phoenix. He's a left-back called... He's got the best name in the A-League, I reckon, Liberato Cacace. He's a young Kiwi left back who's just incredible. I really think he's one to keep an eye out for. in terms of the meteoric rise or potential. We saw Sarpreet Singh come out of the same club last season, much to everyone's surprise, and you know, has been getting some minutes at Bayern Munich. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen for Liberato, but I'd love to see him over at Selhurst, that's for sure. The other one is also a fullback, but at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, and I actually am trying to be as unbiased and as, you know, moving away from my own club, and that's a guy by the name of Ryan Grant.
Has the worst haircut in the world.
Who has been in... Yeah, he's got the worst haircut in Australian football, but he's now pretty much sort of 27, 28, hasn't really played outside of Australia, but he's getting capped for the national side. I just think he'd actually do well if given an opportunity in at a bigger stage. And I'm not saying that's Palace, and I don't actually like the bloke, but I actually just see he's got a bit of mongrel about him, and you know, he could be a potential player to make a step up in the coming years. I don't really see that many players in the A-League at the moment that could potentially go instantly to Palace, but I think there's definitely some in the coming years that could.
Good to hear. What about you guys, Mark and Ned, going in? What's your thoughts?
Is the question just anyone from the A-League going to Palace or
no? Just kind of saying. Well, obviously you're Brisbane. Like Dave's at Melbourne Victory. I know Ned's Melbourne Victory too. Like coming from the Brisbane angle, how are your team going? Is Robbie Fowler your coach?
Yeah, Robbie Fowler at the helm at the moment, which is not probably really panning out the way we all thought it would. Obviously, big name, lots of signings, wholesale changes at the club, and initially started off pretty well, and then went a fantastic run without a win. A couple of hard fought draws, a win away. I think it was over Wanderers while I was overseas. Coaching against his mate down there from yesteryear. So, yeah, I'm not real sure. Two players that come to mind, Anna Marty Holloway, who is a bit Benteco-like, fantastic in the air, and might be handy up front and be on the cheap. And just another guy, not necessarily a defender, Jay O'Shea, who I thought has looked good. Not very consistent,
but
times he has looked good. He's looked great, good in traffic, fast feet. Sorry, boss.
He'd fit right in if he's not consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so had my eye on him. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, I only watch Brisbane A-League games, so I'm not really across the whole league, as Dave would be. And sorry, man, I cut you off early there, plugging your pod with a shitty joke of self-deprecation. Give your pod a plug, mate. What's it called and how often you come out and stuff like that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mark. It's called For Vuck's Sake. Now, that's a bit of a play on words, so in case you didn't notice. So it's V-U-C-K-S, and we started, about 5 years ago. It was a couple of us initially, and then three of us. We're pretty much doing a podcast every week, usually on a Monday night it goes to air, and we try and introduce other content as well, and we've do a lot of videos and other sorts of things like that. So we've branched out from being just a podcast to doing a few other bits and bobs and a bit of merch and stuff like that. And the thing I'd want to say though is that we literally started from scratch. We actually had the Melbourne Victory community kind of crowdfund us a little bit to begin with. We had no equipment, no nothing, so. It's been a fun rise, if you know what I mean, just to actually have feedback from people to say, that it's a good thing, and for us to keep going is sort of the thing that spurred us on. So I think Exiled Eagles has the potential to do the same, boys. I just need more Palace fans moving to Australia, and who knows, with all the stuff that's happening in the UK and Europe right now, it could happen.
Fingers crossed. All right, so Dave, while you're here, as we've got you, who's your prediction to win the A-League this year?
Oh, look, it's Sydney FC. They're miles ahead of everyone else on and off the park at the moment. They just have the right players in every part of the pitch, and you know, tactically at the moment they're just ahead of everyone. Everybody that keeps coming close just keeps falling away. There's a big gap developing now between them and the rest of the league. Of course, the final system, same thing happened a couple of seasons back. Sydney were miles ahead and they lost in the end. But I'm sure as Palace fans, you would appreciate the first past the post system a bit more. But the whole final system in Australia is takes a little getting used to if you're not used to it. But Sydney FC, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed for the Central Coast Mariners. up.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, Dave, Robbie's a massive Central Coast Mariners fan. He's been to at least one game.
Good man.
Maybe two.
Yep. One game. No, one. Been to one.
Sorry. But it was the one where the guy jumped on the pitch with crutches. So, I mean, that's what's important.
That was honestly the best part of the game, and he was on there for ages.
So that's the beauty. That's the beauty of the A-League. That wouldn't happen in any other league in the world. And with sauce bottles at one and two.
The best bit about it is he had crutches on, and he was honestly in the goal mouth for about 5 minutes. No one did anything. He was just there. One bloke's like, get off the beat. He's like, nah.
That is absolutely incredible. Peak A-League. If I can just quickly jump just about players who could potentially step up to Palace. Just to throw one more name out there, a bloke who, again, not at Melbourne Victory, unfortunately. A guy is playing at Adelaide at the moment called Riley McGree. Plays as an attacking midfielder. He's only 21. He's been around the traps all over the place. You've probably seen his goal. It was nominated for a Pushcus Award about 2 years ago. If you haven't seen it, Google Riley McGree. It's spectacular. But he's one that's really sort of stepped up this year. He's already had one sort of foray off to Europe. He went to Club Bruges for a bit, didn't quite break in, and has come back. I mean, he's, as I say, fully all of 21 years old at the moment. But this year he's really started to add some the actual end product to his game as well. So he's started getting some goals, getting some assists. For me, I think he's probably the next Australian that will make that step up. Sort of, he's more sort of in the Aaron Moy type mould. Not that we should be bigging up Brighton players on this pod, but, you know, he is Australian.
Christ, I loved Aaron Moy at Palace.
But yeah, so that he's along that sort of player. Other than that, I'm currently, as we speak, also watching the under-23s, Iraq versus Australia. I don't think there's anyone else that's really going to be pushing Iraq. Maybe have a look at some of the Iraqi players.
Thanks for the reminder, Ned.
Some of the Iraqi players, they're a bit stronger.
And unfortunately, I seem to have forgotten that one was on tonight, so I haven't tuned in. Right, we're coming to the end of this bumper edition, you lucky bastards, and Philly and women and Ned session. And we're coming to the aptly named new segment, because we haven't actually got a name for it, where we have the random Palace person, fact or fiction. And Dave, I believe Ned voted for you. So on with your clue and let us wow you with our lack of actual knowledge of Palace.
Okay, so I'm going to try and start obscure and then narrow in on the target. So when I lived in the UK and was going to watch Palace and talking to Palace fans regularly, for some reason, even though we've had a ton of Aussie players, this was the one player that was talked about the most to me.
Oh, wow.
In a nostalgic... I heard that's a running joke, so I'm gonna bar any further Carl Viet,
I did word him up at least.
Call outs.
It's gonna be my answer.
it surprised me, and you know, I've been a big follower of Australian football and well across all the different Aussies that have played there. Now, the second clue I'm going to give you guys, and that was, as I said, I'm going to start very unspecific and narrow in. He's my age, this person, and I'm 41.
41.
We've got Dale putting his hand up. So he's actually, I won't say he's exactly my age, but he's within a year of my age.
Go on, Dale.
Could it possibly be, 2005? Yeah, I'm going to...
Well, I should say, I'm not saying it's a player that necessarily was of that era. It's just that this was a player historically at Palace that people had brought up with me the
most.
I'm
trying to think of some random Aussies, and Culver is the only one that I can't. I literally can't get past him.
There could be the one and only, I'm never going to turn up and play for you.
I think that's a chance.
Nicky Rizzo.
Jeez, you guys are good. Yeah, it's Nicky Rizzo.
Oh, my God, Nicky Rizzo.
I had a whole raft of other clues that I was about to go through. So he currently runs an international football school, and it's called the... I wasn't going to say what it's called because it gives it away, but it's called the Nicky Rizzo International Football School.
Yeah.
And then I was going to mention the Australian clubs that he had played for. And it's actually, he's played for less Australian clubs than he has European clubs. So,
interesting.
Even though he is an Australian, he's actually spent more of his time overseas in terms of the clubs that he's played for. Now, where's my other part of my list? Yeah. And then I was going to mention the sponsor of the era of the time that he was at Palace, and it was the famous TDK shirt.
Yes.
I
had that
somewhere.
I had that too.
Which were, to me, they were classic era. I love those ones. So, and then I would have guessed that you would have got it by then. That's
nice. Excellent. Hey, well, Nicky, I know you listen to the pod. Please, the open invitation to play whenever we're playing. Please show up. Play with the CPFC Sydney lot as we spank someone else because we are unbelievable.
Well, he's at RPN now.
Yes,
Nicky Rizzo in Sydney.
Yes. Yeah,
or in wider Sydney. So
I see. Well, we normally play. Well, our new home ground's right around the corner from Dale, so he's happy, Bunny.
Apart from I don't play.
Apart from you don't play, you video it.
Yeah,
you get your office bosses to get them to come and help us out.
Yeah, we can't afford the insurance if Dale plays.
Our next one will be at Homebush once Dale gets into office's ear.
All right, fellas, thank you very much for joining us in the first part of 2020. Dave, absolute pleasure to have on board, and mate, we are the most ad hoc, unorganized podcast around. So. Who knows when the next one will be? It might be in 2 weeks. It might be in 2 months. We do not know. But you have an open invitation whenever you'd like to join us. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Ned, Dale and Mark. It's been a pleasure. Keep doing what you're doing because, it's even if no one's listening, it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you very much. As the rest of you buggers, we'll speak again soon. I'm sure we'll... The WhatsApp group will go off at some point over the weekend with me complaining about something while Ned defends the referee.
Up the referees.
See you later. Mate. See you guys later. Hey, before everyone goes, www.optus.com.au/fanbands this weekend on the YouTube channel, 11:30, Palace versus Arsenal. Yours truly will be there.
Shameless.
In case you missed that, anyone, that's Optus. OPTUS.
Go on the YouTube channel, you'll find us.
Thank you very much, guys. All the best at the Palace.